184 of the TV News Podcast, recorded May 24th, 2018. The Kitchen Sink. That's when we'd start talking about the Wet Bandits. You remember the burglar duo from Home Alone?
Oh, of course. Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
Topical. Uh-huh. Very topical.
That's kind of a cool idea that you would like clog the sinks up and then you would turn the water on and then this person's house would fill up with water.
Yeah, it's actually doubly fucked up because not only did you steal all their stuff, but then you also gave a bunch of water and property damage.
Mm-hmm.
And you, like, that's... And a certain Christmas time. That sucks.
Where does that water go to? You're telling me none of these basements had drains in them?
Oh, yeah. They live places that have basements. Mm-hmm. See, here in Texas, we don't have basements.
Yeah. Do you know why that is?
We live in a bedrock or limestone.
We don't have a frost line. So, like, with a basement, you have to put your foundation so many feet below the frost line. Well, at that point, you already have another room. You might as well just, like, fill it out. So that's why in the north or colder places, they'll always have basements because they get below the frost line with their foundation. And then down here, we don't really need that because no frost.
Mm.
Interesting. Right. I thought we also live on like a giant rock, though.
I think that probably has something to do with it,
yeah,
too.
But still, I mean, if it was, they'd find a way if it was helpful.
Basements find a way.
They find a way. It's like life. They find a way.
Folks, we are the TV Dudes, and we are here to talk about a bunch of TV. I'm Grant.
I'm Kyle.
Ashley.
And yeah, we have a big old smorgasbord of shows to discuss. I think it's just kind of a hodgepodge of different things that all of us were interested in, and we haven't met up in a while. I haven't seen you in a while, Ashley.
It's been so long. I've missed you so much.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you too.
Kyle.
Yeah.
You're here
back.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, Kyle.
It's not good to see you.
I know.
Enemy.
It's like if you don't skip a couple episodes, you just kind of overstay your welcome. People remember what you smell like from week to week.
You know, I'm going to be honest. If I didn't say I missed you, I'd be lying to myself and the listeners.
Aww.
I know. It was touching.
That's too corny. We're going to cut camera.
Yeah, that's
just
fair.
Me?
That's
his
fair.
Heart grew two sizes that evening.
Just on me. Don't look at them. That's cheesy.
I'm
over
too
there.
Allergic to be this corny. It makes me tear up.
Folks, we're going to be talking about possibly we'll jump into Fahrenheit 451, the new HBO movie. Ali Wong has a new comedy special out on Netflix, Hard Knock Wife. Atlanta season 2, the entire
Finally.
Season. We got to discuss that. And of course, as always, we got to talk about Westworld. Because shit's crazy.
Gang sign.
Was that a Westworld gang sign?
I'm trying to mount new little gang signs for
it's
West
not a
Compton
good idea.
World.
Yeah, you can
not
retire
a good
that.
Idea.
All right.
But folks,
I'm so sorry.
Of course, before we get into all of that, we want to do some plugs. We got to do some plugs. Hey, if you guys like what you're hearing and you want to help us out, you guys can go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review, and we will read that here on the show. It's a great way to support us. We really do appreciate it, and it's free.
Yeah, if you got an iPhone, you can just say, hey, Siri, give the TV Dudes podcast a 5-star rating and write a review, and it'll just do it.
Really?
I believe so. Maybe not the just do it part, but it'll like pull it up and then you just hit a button and then you 5-starred us with your voice.
It's pretty dope.
We affect them with our voice. You can affect us with your voice.
Here's another little secret hack. If you guys do write a review, you can write pretty much anything and we'll read it here on the show. And some people have tricked me into reading some horrible things. So
if it's on the teleprompter, he will pronounce the words. It gets weird.
Yeah.
Especially around the holidays.
I am Grant Davis.
2015 will never get back, Grant.
Another way you guys can help us out is go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a dollar or two an episode. You know, whatever's lying around, that change in the bucket. Buy us a Starbucks frap. One frap a month. And that's like $4, right?
No frapping way.
And you guys help keep this little operation.
You are killing it today.
And the terrible jokes that come from Kyle's mouth, you are keeping those alive. And isn't that The dream. Once again, that is patreon.com/TVDudes. And we also have a new patron to thank. Michael Barron has joined the ranks as a new patron. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Welcome. And hey, if you guys are patrons, you get to enjoy bonus exclusive content where we will discuss our favorite Disney songs or our,
oh my God,
our favorite vehicles from sci-fi movies, or I don't know, whatever topic we're going to pick this week.
I'm going to need a number limit, like top five,
okay,
because I've worked on these lists and I have opinions.
Okay, top 47.
Yes!
And that's it. We're not going to go higher than that. It's going to be too long. Okay, yeah. Thank you guys so much. We also want to mention real quick that we are proud members of the newly renamed Electric Sweater Network. Did you know this?
So I learned this the last time we recorded after my slight hiatus.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I thought it was like one of Kyle's jokes, and then it turns out it was true.
Yeah, it's not a bad Kyle joke. It's a
true.
Yeah, we're
it's true.
Electric Sweater.
Real
and
life.
I think that's how we're doing it so far.
Okay,
we're
I like it.
Yeah,
I like
electric
it.
Electric Sweater.
I want to make like an entire song out of this that like has us with like white shirts open in the breeze, and we're on.
Oh, my chest hair blowing.
Yeah,
luscious locks.
See, I almost feel like it should be, if I can totally switch tone here, like something dubsteppy, where you have like industrial sweaters with like lighting effects and stuff, and like blah 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 blah, and like we're all just like blasting like electric sweaters.
Sort of like we're Fly Girls for Daft Punk.
Exactly.
I like it. Yes.
How is Electric Sweater not a Daft Punk song?
It probably is. I think that we should check that, or we're going to be corrected in the comments.
Uh-oh.
That would be a really cool tagline if it's not. You know, like, Electric Sweater, not a Daft Punk song.
Hashtag not a Daft Punk song.
All right, guys. Let's get into the news. We got a good couple of stories here. And because I happen to be an unapologetic, huge Damon Lindelof fan, the very first story goes to my boy. Seriously, I gotta be like one of his number one fans.
No,
I actually
it's fair.
Get into arguments with people. I get very confrontational when they diss the guy because he's brilliant. He's one of the best writers on television ever.
Bar none.
Lost was groundbreaking, is a game changer, and that's why genre TV is everywhere now. And Leftovers was beautiful and intimate and fucking crazy. Anyway.
Carrie Coon.
He is doing Watchmen now. And if you guys are familiar with Watchmen, you're familiar with Alan Moore created this back in the 80s. And it's one of the most groundbreaking graphic novels of all time kind of thing. That's like deconstructing the comic book superhero mythology and all that. And he also is a crazy warlock who doesn't want anyone to ever adapt any of the stuff that he signed his rights away to and so tough shit ever. And some people are Alan Moore's zealots who are like, you shan't touch his work. And other people are like, yeah, fuck off, though. We want to see an adaptation on something else. It turns out that Damon Lindelof kind of falls in between those camps because he has this preciousness about, like, you know what? I want to respect Alan Moore. I don't want to mess too much with his stuff. But also, I'm a huge fanboy, and I would love to work on this project. I've been a fan since I was a little kid. It was one of those bonding moments with my father. And he wrote this big five-page letter to fans and non-fans alike explaining how he feels about this entire ordeal and taking on the project, why he chose to do it. And he ultimately landed on, like, you know, he's been turning this project down like for the past few years from different people who wanted to produce it. And finally, the third time someone asked him to do it, he said yes. But he doesn't want to do a direct adaptation. We already had Zack Snyder do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he's decided he's taking it upon himself to keep something within this world, but do a little bit of a modern take with different characters that aren't the same character. So I think that rumor we had a few weeks ago where it was a bunch of cops in an Oklahoma police station that might have superpowers, and that was the casting list, that's actually going to happen?
Wow.
And they just started doing a bunch of casting. And did you guys see some of the cast?
I haven't read it yet. I'm coming into this cold.
Regina King from Leftovers recently.
Yeah.
Louis Gossett Jr., Don Johnson, and then some other people that you would probably recognize if you saw a picture of them. Adelaide Clemens, she was in Rectify, and Andrew Howard, he was in Hell on Wheels and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's kind of I think he plays like a Russian bad guy a lot. And Tim Blake Nelson from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Yeah. And he's what's his name? The leader from the Hulk movie. They're all going to be in this.
Do we know who they're playing yet? Or
no, but King is almost certainly playing an independent and intelligent cop who is also a realist. Is the one note of who might be whom?
Okay.
In this,
interesting.
But I imagine this all takes place in the same world where Ozymandias, you know, wrecks shit and yet somehow is the savior of everyone based on, like, what they don't know behind the scenes. And Rorschach's dead still and all that.
Yeah.
So, and Manhattan ghosted. So I don't know. I'm excited that this exists in the same universe. It's kind of like Fargo, I guess.
Yeah. So some full frontal blue dudity is headed our way.
You think we're going to see him again?
I mean, maybe.
It's HBO. We're going to see some penis.
Yeah. I mean, it might as well be his. Yeah.
That's what the B stands for.
Well-known.
I don't think they ever show boner penis, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They it would have to be HFO for flaccid.
Yeah. The home Fox office.
The Ashley Moreno story. No. Actual well-known Ashley Moreno fact. Alan Moore's Run of Swamp Thing is one of my favorite books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Super good.
Who's it that's adapting Swamp Thing right now?
I don't know, but I would love it to be his version because I super love it.
Yeah.
It's real good.
All right. Next story. I talked way too much about that, but
nope, that's okay. You have feelings.
A little bit jazzed.
I know.
Yeah, he's my boyfriend. Hey, love
Aww.
You. Arrested Development.
Sweet. Yikes.
Is back in the news, not only because they have a new season. But there was a New York Times article written by, or an interview conducted with the majority of the cast. I believe Michael Cera and Portia de Rossi were not present, which might have changed a little bit of the conversation, perhaps. I don't know. But Soap and Deb conducted an interview with the cast, and Jeffrey Tambor's there, and he's got a cloud that hangs over him. Like, they were already filming a lot of the season before the allegations came out, and it was like, well, do we embrace him because we already committed to this project, or do we kick that guy to the curb? And they've decided to go in, you know, the former and say, you know, he's part of the family, and we want to give him a chance. But anyway, they conducted an interview, and it came out during the interview that Jeffrey Tambor had, like, been terribly verbally abusive to Jessica Walter, who plays the matriarch of the Bluth family. And, yeah, it was kind of messed up. Like, she was crying during the interview, and Jason Bateman was, like, defending Tambor, and David Cross even comes and kind of defends Tambor. Only Aaliyah Shotcat was kind of like, no, you guys should be accountable. And it was just,
wow.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, that puts a dark cloud over the show I was,
you know,
not great.
Excited about.
Here is the problem with the first Netflix, you know, season where everybody got their own episode, and the problem with event like ever like doing the show justice again. They're all rock stars now, you know. Even Tambor, who's got kind of like this cloud over him, you know, had really kind of like struck this whole other thing.
Oh, yeah,
to like make his career.
He was an Emmy nominee for his Transparent work, and he was getting accolades left and right for it. But then he got fired from that show, and, like, you know, the interviewer was like, "So, do you think you should, like, if you've been accused of all this stuff, would you hire someone like you to work in this industry?" He's like, "Well, I think I would, but, you know, no, no one should work with a guy like that."
What a poignant question.
Well, I think it's kind of to your point. Well, if they're all rock stars now, then nobody would have to put up with it. But they're like, well, we're going to slide it under the table anyways. Like, it doesn't like, it doesn't, they don't need him to carry the show at that point.
They
or
don't.
Anything.
In fact, I
any
always,
of them could.
I'm kind of, I don't
that's
like.
That's where we are, though.
The George character, and I don't really like the father. I feel
I know.
Like
it's,
he was supposed to leave in the first episode anyway of the entire season. Like, he was supposed to go to jail, and it was supposed to be everyone else kind of figuring things out. But they liked Tambor, so they kept him around and kept returning to the jail to, like, visit him. But he wasn't supposed to, like, go
yeah, like, you couldn't write
episode.
A sleaze bag off of that show.
Idea.
But if you wanted to.
Recast him in a very Iron Man 2 sort of way, all right? With Bryan Cranston.
Oh.
Return to form, baby.
Return to form.
But he's not that old. Actually,
I know.
I don't know how different.
But that's
like,
the thing. It would be like a totally different dad character. But
well, we could get well, like, which dad though? Are we talking like
way more Malcolm
okay,
in the middle
yeah,
than
or,
Breaking Bad?
Okay, because I was like, yeah. When he said he's not that old, I was like, well, yeah, because in Breaking Bad, he definitely looks that old, but...
I would just love, like, Bryan Cranston calling Jason Bateman son for 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Son, get over here.
I can kind of watch him doing anything, though. He's so great.
Yeah.
Man.
Please don't let us down, Bryan Cranston.
What's the next news story we can derail?
Well, what do you guys think, though? Like, are you excited about this season now?
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
and I think a little bit to kind of what you were saying, I don't really see the need at this point. It's all a victory lap anyways. It's not like we're ever going to get back to the place we once were with that show.
It didn't even, like, capture it after the first season. Really.
Exactly. So if you wanted to take the side of correct, it would be easy to do so.
Yeah.
Really. And even if, like,
they could just do footage not found for every scene
for
he's supposed
everyone.
To be in.
Or they
and
could
it would
just
be a running joke that they've done before anyway.
Or it could just be that, like, we got rid of the sleazebag dad. It could actually be like, yeah, it actually turns out that he was a sleazebag and we got rid of him.
Yeah.
I can hear Ron Howard saying that. Well, it actually turns out he was a sleazebag and we got rid of him.
And I think my favorite part is how easy would it be if your boy turns out to be a gross boy not to stick up for him?
Right.
Especially if, I mean, they have no reason to need to. Like, it's disappointing. It's disappointing.
I get it. I mean, they're family, and maybe they really do feel that closeness. Except then Jessica Walter's crying during the interview, and everyone else is just, like, mansplaining over her.
Well, and I think what's especially telling about this is that if you're a woman in a family, that's how things go down. So, yeah, okay. I could see that.
I don't know what she was saying, Kyle. Anyway, it's
true. It's true.
All right. We got one last story here, guys, before we jump into the break. And that is that, you know, there's this, what's the word, asshole who's currently in the White House. But there was this guy that used to be in the White House beforehand.
Is that your sign for asshole?
Who,
I think that might actually be the sign for asshole. I think I remember that from Mr. Holland's opus.
I think it's underhand.
It's
though,
underhand,
right?
Though, yeah.
Yeah. And if you see it, it's also open chest and I get to punch you. Anyway, our former president, Barack Obama, and his wife, Michelle Obama, just signed a deal with Netflix, and I didn't actually read all the details of this, but I did see that, because they signed a deal that, like, some people are boycotting, I'm like, good luck with boycotting Netflix. okay, let's see. So the announcement about the Obama partnership, the write-up says, one of the simple joys of our time in public service was getting to meet so many fascinating people from all walks of life and help them share their experiences with a wider audience. That's why we're excited to partner with Netflix. We hope to cultivate and curate the talented, inspiring, creative voices who are able to promote greater empathy and understanding between peoples and help them share their stories around the world. Man. Remember when there used to be an eloquent and, like, compassionate person in the White House?
It was like for one brief shining moment, the White House wasn't a goddamn frat house. It was so eight glorious years of class.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we will be back to talk about a bunch of shows. We have a big old list. We'll be right back. right, guys. So we are going to talk about a couple of one-off miniseries. Well, one's a miniseries and one's a comedy special. Fahrenheit 451 over on HBO, and then Ali Wong's comedy special Hard Knock Wife over on Netflix. Then we're going to jump over and talk about Atlanta Season 2, and then finally land on the most recent episode of Westworld over on HBO.
Yes.
But first up, Fahrenheit 451. This is the adaptation of a Ray Bradbury book, which is kind of famous because I believe 451 degrees is the exact temperature when paper combusts, right? It goes into flames.
Let's ask our local math expert.
Is that correct, actually?
That is correct.
Yes, I remember
one
thing.
I have no idea. This is why we need you to watch those Bill Nye episodes, Kyle.
Anyway, so this new update of the movie, it seems like Michael B. Jordan is, I don't know, what, a firefighter?
He is. He is a firefighter of the future, which instead of putting out fires, they set fires. Two books.
To what?
Two books. So the idea is that there's some additional like wars that kind of break out, and what it's kind of decided is that there is a preference for happiness and stability over what we might have initially considered freedom, or kind of at least freedom of thought and kind of the more basic democratic ideals that, like, you know, we were kind of founded on. And so if people read, the idea is that it's full of insanity and people will argue and so on and so forth. But actually, what's really going on is what has always gone on, which is that when somebody tries to control information, they're kind of trying to control the public.
So is it that Michael B. Jordan, he like figures out that they're trying to oppress knowledge, and he's like, I'm going to save these books. And he's like,
well, you know, something interesting that I find that the story does, and I haven't read the book, but in this, you know, I guess we call this a made for TV movie.
Made for fancy TV.
You know, something I found interesting, which, you know, it's kind of like a comment on the way our justice system works now, is you have all this like books are like information. It's outlawed. So these firefighters, they come to your house, they pull you out and they burn your stuff in the middle of the street. Well, then what do we see them do as soon as they get home? They're hiding postcards in their, you know, crawl space. They're writing like little notes to themselves and then burning them. They're getting a taste on the side, you know, because the thing is, it's not that they believe in the rules. It's that, you know, they believe the rules don't apply to them.
So it's a dystopian future where people can't look at books, and he somehow saves the day, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So one thing, I think we kind of talked a little bit about it before we started recording, which is that I liked it, I didn't love it. And I don't think a lot of what I didn't love wasn't necessarily about this interpretation. Just that it's a bit on the nose, but honestly, so is the novella. It's a bit on the nose. But one thing I really did like about this particular adaptation is that it's somewhat updated from where the novella was when Bradbury wrote it to where we are now. And so there's a big emphasis on social media is kind of in it. There's this kind of idea that we created a system that controlled us because we wanted to. And it's kind of rooted in this sort of social media, getting the feedback that you wanted, kind of like updated Orwellian kind of idea that I liked a lot. I thought it was really cool. And I think a little to Kyle's point, there's something about information in books and facts that the firefighters and the people in charge can't quite put their fingers on. And when they see it and when they have tiny tastes of it, they're intrigued. But they've been indoctrinated in a system where facts don't exist. So, and the emphasis on that I really liked too, given our current discourse.
Are they literate?
They are. Not...
Do they just read text
on screens
or something?
Don't they speak in like some hieroglyphic emoji language?
Yeah,
that's what it kind of
looks like. In this one.
TJ Miller in this with like, emoji.
and some of them are. Some of them probably aren't, but the main characters are. And so in Michael B. Jordan's case, he plays the main character. I don't know if we're doing spoilers or not. Sure, spoilers. And so he has these memories that kind of haunt him, but the eye drops that they use kind of suppress memory, and they make it difficult to separate fact and fiction. And this idea that facts kind of don't exist and that they'll die with the people who once remembered them is kind of central to, like, the story.
Right.
Which is cool. And the focus on that, I think, is a cool update for where we kind of are today. But something happens. He falls in love. He starts remembering something. He doesn't take his eye drops, and then he remembers.
Aww.
I love dystopian futures where drugs are eye drops.
Like, yeah.
I can't, you know, for the, never mind.
Usually eye drops cover up your drugs.
It's true.
They are your drugs.
Yeah, it's true. I thought he did an amazing job. Of course he did. I really liked him as the main character. I liked his relationship. So it's kind of him, and then the firefighters are kind of like, if you don't know, a sort of military-esque type order, and his direct report and the kind of relationship that they have, I think is fabulous.
Yeah. What did you think, Kyle?
I thought that this movie had beautiful design. And there were two things that popped out me. I know we're getting away from the story.
First was
the opening title sequence where they showed just all these like great works of like from literary past, and then like the pages burning. It was neat because there wasn't anything like particularly cool and graphic about the way that they showed this, but seeing like all of these images in the same place, like in that kind of a sequence, really kind of set you up for the importance of, you know, this thing that these guys are burning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, examples in the film, but I just thought it was really beautiful how they were able to take, you know, images and text on the screen and do that. But the other thing that blew my mind, and I cannot wait to get one of these things, the television in Michael B. Jordan's living room that wraps around the backside of the couch. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about.
So he's just sitting there in the living room. I'll set this up for the listeners at home. So essentially, you know, you can just be sitting on your couch reading a book, and then the wall that your TV would be on is floor to ceiling, you know, television. But then that wraps around not only the walls to the side of you, but behind you, which might be kind of weird for watching a movie. But he has got this like screensaver thing where it's him out in the ocean and like crazy waves going around, and he's just sitting in the middle of it. And then like the waves come up against the side of the wall, and now you're underwater. Like, you guys know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
It's kind of like made the movie for me.
It is really cool.
This.
It is really cool, but point of clarification. It is a tool of the dystopia.
All right.
Which.
To keep it, it's like Soma, to keep him docile.
Yeah,
the brainwashed thing? I got brainwashed.
I'm like, not saying you got brainwashed.
I'm like, oh, this is a pretty
whole world
he has right here.
The whole world is made easy.
Tools of pacification can also be interesting, like meditation tools, like for us,
it's
not
true.
In a dystopia. So
it's true. No, but also to be fair, it was fucking sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, it was fucking sweet.
I was like, what kind of screensaver would I have?
I would go back to flying toasters. I'd go retro with it.
Oh.
All right. Well, let's jump over to Netflix, because Ali Wong, the comedian who came out 2 years ago, I want to say, or so, with
Baby Cobra.
Yeah. And that was like the show or the comedy, stand-up comedy on Netflix that like really exploded her career.
Yeah.
She's back with another special where she's once again pregnant on stage and makes zero mention of it again, which I guess is part of her shtick.
Oh my God, I just love her so much. It's just like good to know that we live in a world where she's out there right now.
This one's called
goddamn hilarious.
Yeah, this one's called Hard Knock Wife. And I hadn't actually seen Baby Cobra, but my wife and I sat down and watched this one. And then we're like, all right, let's check out the one before this.
Yeah.
To which my wife just critiqued her makeup and outfit the entire time. So it was like comedy. I was like,
that's so funny. I would have thought that your wife would really relate. Like, I'm not a mother, and I feel like I really just
my wife's both a mother and Asian, and so she was picking up on a lot of things that she was saying and like laughing about it. But she was also just like really criticizing how people. It's like, that's kind of fucked up. She's like, shut up.
Yeah, I keep trying to get my sister to watch it because I'm not a wife and I'm not a mother, and I feel like Ali Wong is speaking directly to me. I would just like, oh my, I would do anything you asked me to do. I love you. So I can't imagine how she must resonate with them.
It was pretty funny watching these back to back and watching them in reverse order, because in the Hard Knock Wife special, she really goes into some intimate and kind of grotesque details of what goes on with the mom's body right after having a baby.
Oh my
what
God.
She has to deal with. And a lot of that was like my wife going, yes, and me going, oh shit, I remember that. It was terrible. And it's very true, and it's kind of traumatizing to the point where you need a year or two to forget what you went through having a kid before you're willing to have another kid.
Oh my God, but she's talking about her friend that went in a woman and came out two dudes, where her labia have just turned into two dongs. Yeah. I died. She was like, my friend used to be the sweetest, most polite, kind-hearted woman you have ever met. And after 72 hours of labor that ended up ending in a C-section anyway, she came out the most raw-ass bitch you have ever met. And I was just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
And where she goes from there, like, it's not worth me paraphrasing. You should just have to watch it. It's hilarious. I died. It's so good.
It's interesting because I feel like she has great timing. She has a really good command of the audience. And then suddenly she goes into bizarrely like gross out humor, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's just like, now I'm just gonna talk about farts and just make fart noises for a while. I'm like, why did it all of a sudden go super juvenile? I'm still kind of on board, but I'm a little weirded out that like she just shifted tone there. And she does this in both specials.
She does. And one of my favorite things is that she clearly has like full-blown like a bathing suit underwear underneath, because she knows she's going to make jokes about her pussy and
lifting up her skirt and showing her panties.
So she's like, oh, okay, well, I need another print other than the print I'm wearing. I guess I'll go stripes are a good compliment.
Yeah.
It's that kind of foresight.
It was a... pretty funny, and yeah, I guess she's a writer on Fresh Off the Boat. I didn't realize that until she also started talking about her career, and I had to go, like, well, my wife was looking up everything actively and going, she's actually a writer on this, and telling me all the stats. And
this is what shade or nail polish is.
Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't look good with her
hair. With her eyes, right?
Man, so I have not watched Fresh Off the Boat, but now I have, okay, that Ali Wong is a writer on it, and then also that one of my favorite comedians off of Two Dope Queens is special. On HBO is also a writer on it.
Oh, really?
I'm sold. I got to check out the show because they are fucking hilarious.
It's supposed to be pretty great.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I don't watch like any of the. I don't really watch any comedies except for like The Good Place off of the network.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then I lie and say that I watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I'm way behind.
You're part of the problem.
I'm part of the problem.
Well, we also learned when we tried to get me hooked up with a DirecTV that I'm not good at trying to figure out how to watch Netflix or network TV either. So I might need help. But
right. Okay. Well, let's take a break from that and go talk about Atlanta, because it's finally wrapped up its second season, and we kind of came close, and we're circling around the idea, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were a champion of this,
oh.
of us talking about just like make an episode about Donald Glover, because he is having not only a moment, he's having a couple month like takeover right now.
You know, and when you start listing out all of the things that he's done in and around television,
right?
Not to mention like this movie career that I'm sure is just going to continue to skyrocket, but. He really has had an influence on stuff that we talk about continually. I mean, the big one, obviously, Community.
Community, yeah. Saturday Night Live, he just hosted it, and he used to be a writer. That's where one of the few places he got to start. I mean, he started
Rock.
Derek Comedy, right? And then he mm-hmm. got picked up by them.
Oh, my gosh. And there were so many of those.
Oh, wait, was he a writer for 30 Rock?
Yeah, he wrote on 30 Rock before Community.
Was he a writer on SNL?
Maybe just... I don't think on SNL.
Maybe
he's famous. You know how he got his gig writing for 30 Rock?
How?
He wrote a spec episode of The Simpsons. And Tina Fey, I think I heard this on Fresh Air. But yeah, I guess Tina Fey read this, liked it, and yeah.
Ah.
That was a zin. The Simpsons.
I knew he was a writer somewhere, and I figured since he was on SNL, I was like, oh, it's because he was a writer there? But I was just conflating things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're just going to talk about how great Donald Glover is for 30 minutes.
I just love him so much.
By the way, he's in a new movie called Solo, and from what I can tell, he's probably the only reason to go see that movie.
Yeah, I heard he's the bright light in it that is not shining often enough, which I don't know how they fucked that up. Like, I came to see Han and Lando, and now that, yeah.
Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it.
I'm going on Saturday.
Okay, so I'm going on Friday and Saturday. So I got tickets to Friday, and then my nephew's 8-year-old birthday.
What?
I know. Is going to go see it. So
lucky dog. Well.
So if you're disappointed the first time, you can just sleep through that second round.
I can. In my little R2-D2 costume I'm making for his party.
That'll be pretty dope.
It'll be sweet.
So anyway, we're done with our review of Atlanta. okay, Atlanta. So we had the first season where Earn Marks is a smart dude, but a dude who's just kind of stumbling through life, and he dropped out of going to some Ivy League school. I don't even remember which one.
Princeton.
But obviously he was smart enough to get out of Atlanta and go attend Princeton for a bit. But then he comes back, and he's like working an airport gig, and he's living in a storage unit, mm-hmm. and he's got a daughter that he can't afford to take care of, and he's got a cousin who starts blowing up right in Atlanta as a rapper, and so he tries to like weasel his way in and be a manager for him, but he isn't really good at it, and I think we see that a bit more this season.
Well, in terms of like his talent level, I think when you're starting off in music or any type of like talent like that, there's a lot of hustling in the beginning, but then there's a point where you kind of reach that peak where now people see the value in you, and people who are much better at this and who have the scale to really blow out, you know, this guy's career, they want to come in and get it in peace now. And Earn, he's just outgunned.
Yeah.
His hustle doesn't really... Well, and they didn't get much into it this season, but I could definitely see them going in the future. But, you know, he's no shot against these big agencies.
He doesn't seem to do much through this season, and even in the last season, to, like, champion himself and put himself out there. And it's interesting as the lead to kind of watch this, and you're rooting for him. And I find myself just kind of, in a way, disappointed, especially when Paperboy, his cousin, will just be like, you need to be better at this. You need to step up and be a lot better. I loved the arc of this and how this weaves. And it goes in such crazy directions.
You know, kind of. So what we're talking about right now is definitely an overarching theme to the entire season. Like where Earn fits into everybody's lives. And I love how we open up this season with the Alligator Man episode, which has got a million great things about it.
Yeah.
But kind of the point to this episode was to show us, like, Paperboy is not the first talented musician to come from this neighborhood. Earn is not the first guy to, like, manage a family member and to get involved in all this stuff that we've seen.
It's even in his own family that this has happened.
Exactly.
And there's a Chekhov's gun.
Well, and, you know, I can imagine, you know, being that character in that moment, like, wow, like what I'm doing right now doesn't really matter, you know? In 20 years, I'm going to be the fucking Alligator Man, you know?
Right.
And then we kind of go into the season where you were saying where he just doesn't really step up ever. Like he never becomes more than, you know, he is.
There are certain shows that I marvel at how quickly paced they are. The Good Place is a great example, I think, of this, where they have a pretty ambitious plot, and they run through it. And each season, I'm like, shit, I didn't expect you to already get there in this plot. And, oh, wow, you're really developing and just running with it and changing left and right and expanding this universe and the mythology of it. This one runs a little bit slower than I would anticipate. Just because it seems like it has the the bones of this underdog story and rising up and meeting the challenge and being the hero that like sort of squares off against all these other people like trying to get his piece of the management pie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's ripe for that, but instead it takes this sort of slow burn as it just kind of gives these little vignettes in the lives of each of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're still left at the end of this season with Earn not necessarily there's growth, but it's slow, right?
Yeah, it's more almost like we end this season with Alfred Paperboy's confirmation of his faith in Earn.
Yes.
But not in Earn's ability. It's like he was like, yeah, like.
Without spoiling that last scene, it was like in a moment.
Oh my God,
like,
it was wow, so good.
You stepped up and you really did it. And then something happens and it's like, oh, but.
We got to talk about that last scene.
Okay, okay. Maybe.
We'll talk about it in a bit.
Yeah, okay. we'll get to that.
More generally, before we go into any spoilers, so my friends who haven't seen Atlanta, I have a hard time putting into words what makes it so remarkably special.
Right.
And it would be enough that it's funny in that heartbreaking kind of way that a good kind of dark comedy is. That would be enough to make it like a great show. But it has this weird kind of surreal aspect to it. Like I'm thinking about
it gets
the episode
compared to David Lynch a bit.
Yeah, it really and I think that's fair. There's that strange episode, and this is something Grant and I were talking about before we started recording. I really love the episode with that creepy murder mansion funhouse.
Tony
like,
Perkins or something.
Teddy Perkins. And yeah, it's very like Michael Jackson-esque, and so it comments on, you know, that kind of experience of an entertainer. It's a very classic kind of, you know, horror movie. I mean, it's just so fabulous.
It also deals with identity and blackness and comfort.
My God, it does so many amazing things. And then you mentioned how much you liked the episode with Alfred when he's in the woods.
Right. That one was so powerful.
It was so powerful and so scary and upsetting.
Especially with how it starts off with this dream sequence that he might be having where his mom is in the room and like calling out to him. And it like because Al is a character who like keeps his feelings close to his vest. Right. He doesn't really want to speak about how he's feeling about a situation. He's just kind of grumbly about most things. But if you show a scene like that, you know that who he is and whether or not he's living up to certain expectations is on his mind at all times, even
all
if he's not talking about it. And I thought, okay, this is like a pretty good episode where it's dealing with his relationship with his girlfriend, quote unquote, I guess. And when he blows up at her, I'm like, okay, I'm just going along with this. And then the whole thing takes like a dog left
just like
turn, and it's like, whoa. Suddenly, the assault and his magical, mystical, fucked up journey through the woods, like in fear and paranoia and hallucination, is just all.
And then the profound. Weird, and then the entirely like weird experience he has after going through all of this with his white fan.
Yeah,
like
oh that
where it's just
that
like
was just a beautiful way to cap that episode off, where the thing that he's like fighting so hard to not do at the end of it, he's just like. Yeah, fuck it.
Like, that kid has no idea the day that he just had. Like,
right.
It's so good. And so all of these things, like, when I think about what makes a show so good, it's like all of that is, like, incredible. And then the kind of flashback episode, how poignant it is about how the whole episode,
the kids
and the FUBU, the whole episode was about clothes. And all of us are going, oh, my God, none of this matters. And their white friend is like, "This, I don't care about your shirt. It doesn't matter." And then after somebody commits suicide, the bullying, everything, he goes home to hear from his parents, "You're a black man. Your clothes matter."
Right.
Broke my heart. Like, it's such a good show. Like, it's so funny and so heartbreaking. And
you know, if I could go back to that, the episode with Al where kind of his day from hell.
Yeah.
You know, something interesting about that episode as well as the Teddy Perkins, I hope I'm getting that name right, episode where I feel like...
I think it's Teddy... Is it Teddy Perkins?
Yeah, Teddy Perkins.
Okay, Teddy Perkins. Yeah.
So in both of those episodes, Donald, like, they did something with the show that TV hardly ever does, which they got a legitimate scare out of me. And yeah. The way that they did it is they get you to this point, and I feel like it's a better example in the Al episode, where, you know, he's being chased around by this homeless guy in the woods, and you're just like... The guy seems annoying. You know, he seems kind of nutty and kind of, you know, like, and they make you forget in a second, like, oh no, you're in the middle of the woods, you know, like this is a dangerous place. And he pulls the knife out on him and it goes from like ridiculous and, oh, this isn't scary. What are they doing to fuck? Like, oh, no. And the same thing happens in the Teddy Perkins episode, like right before kind of shit goes off the deep end.
With the gun in the basement.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, what is this goofy, you know, face, you know, prosthetic? Like, what are they doing? And then it's like, oh, no.
Yeah, it looked like the Invisible Man kind of. Like,
yeah, well, like, and
what's
then
going on here?
The timing of this, like, he's such a good writer. Like, so, like, the timing of the episode is so perfect because just when you're like, okay, this is a horror movie episode, it cuts to his friends who are going through the drive-thru. They were like, no, and like Google Sammy so-so, whatever. They're like, oh, shit. And it's hilarious. It's so funny. Like,
you dead yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Great tension to make you kind of forget what the genre is.
Yeah,
on.
Then they bring it back and he goes into the attic. And I was like, oh, right. This is where we are.
I'm also in love with Zazie Beetz. And
oh.
The Germany episode, I don't know what it was called necessarily, but where she goes back to where she grew up.
I think it's like, is it
they
Helena?
Have this, like, German festival that's like all full of like fucked up things and like it's just
and
really traditional.
We get to meet her friend who is dating the DJ from season one episode where he dropped the N-word.
Oh, the Drake episode.
Okay.
Well, no, in the German episode.
Oh, the German episode. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because you remember in the German episode, she has that big thing with her friend where her friend
makes the
racial comments towards her. All right. The while, her friend is dating the guy from season one who would say the N-word around Earn, but not around Al.
Oh, that's right.
I actually didn't put
those
two.
You guys didn't catch that?
No, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, levels.
I loved, so, and I think this is like what makes this show so special is it's like, there's a lot of like kind of, I mean, honestly, like kind of heavy shit like going on. And then they're driving in the car on the way to this like traditional, I'm doing air quotes, festival. And she's like, I'm going to ask a question. It's going to sound like a stoner question, but it's not. Are black women brunettes? And it's funny and upsetting. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
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 You know, there was a few moments like that where it was so poignant that it kind of hurt a little bit. I think of when he goes to the movie theater and he tries to use the $100 bill.
Yeah.
And the guy comes up behind him, uses the $100 bill, and he goes to say something, and the guy just moves his coat, and he's got a conceal and carry on him.
Right.
And Donald Glover's character, yeah, okay, we're out. Talk to you later.
So they had a new character on this season who, I mean, I wish I remembered the dude's name, but the dude who's just couch surfing at Al's house the entire time. And in a way, he acts as a little bit of a foil for Earn, just because he's loudmouth and
it's like
a little bit skeevy because he like bootlegs stuff and just like steals stuff out of stores, but also he's implanted himself as valuable in Al's life and the scene where he makes himself security and then they end up getting in a fight and then later when they're driving away. The big confrontation has Earn go ahead and like try and step up to this guy and gets his ass beat.
Oh, that was brutal.
It was so brutal. And I thought, I don't know where the characters pick up from here because like it was almost, it felt to me like Earn was just drawing a line like, no, you're going to respect me or else. And he got his ass beat. And then they just kind of tried to act like nothing happened.
Well, what's interesting
is...
I think
Chris Davis playing Tracy.
Tracy, okay. Yeah.
When that scene started, all right, I totally thought, I was like, oh, he's fucking it up. Like, Earn is fucking it up with everybody else. They just want him to shut up. But he doesn't realize he's the one who screwed everything up. They already are pissed at him. And now he's making things worse. And then when you see him get his ass kicked, it totally flips the dynamic, because when he gets back, they're no longer pissed at him. They're just like, damn.
Yeah, right?
You just got the fuck beat out of you.
Which, you know, I guess we can go ahead and jump to the last episode. And, you know, we got some interesting developments with Earn and his relationship with Van, his girlfriend and mother of his child. And they, like, you know, they kind of broke things off a little bit, but they're still trying to make things work.
Mm-hmm. At the festival.
Yeah, because she kind of wanted to, like, she made an ultimatum of, like, lock you down or else leave. And he was like, well, then bye. Because he doesn't want that tie.
Because he's
right
got
now.
Pride. Oh, my gosh. The character, that's like his number one character flaw will always be his pride. Like,
his ego.
Yeah, if there's a situation where, like, he can be prideful and fuck it up, he's going to do it every episode. Like, he never gets a happy ending.
Which is weird because you know that he's such a sweet guy. Like, he is. Mm-hmm. He's a really kind dude.
Right. But there's this other element that I think is constantly, like, under the surface. Like, sometimes they kind of address it. But the fact that he went to Princeton and he comes back there, I think that he has his nose up a little bit around everyone else.
Yeah, like, for sure.
I'm smarter. I should be able to handle all this. But the fact that he can't, he doesn't have the connections. He can't do everything as easily. And he's hustling and doesn't feel appreciated because some things just come naturally just by Al being who he is. He can walk up to people. And meanwhile, Earn's hustled for a meeting that ends up being fruitless.
Well, and I think it's really, like, yeah, for sure. And I think it's really demonstrated when they go to get in the last episode. It's not Tracy. It's their other friend who's going to go on tour with them. They have to get him a passport.
Oh, Darius. He's my favorite character. Yeah, Darius.
Yeah, Darius. Sorry. Yeah, Darius. They go to get him his passport, and he asks the guy that's helping them, do you think that there's an... It was after Paperboy tells him, get me a Jewish attorney.
Right, right.
And he's like, do you think that there is a black attorney who's as good as a Jewish attorney? And the kid's response is, oh, yeah, for sure. It's just that for systemic reasons, he doesn't have the kind of connections that my cousin
does. It was a very point-blank answer. That
yeah, I was just like, oh, fuck. And then Earn's response is like, yeah, right, of course, they're perfectly good attorneys. And that must have been a strange thing for Earn to hear, because I think he does have it in him, and I think he works very hard in Alfred's
interest, and he wants to.
He just doesn't have those connections yet, and how could he?
And he wants to work with other, like, black people in the industry that, like, they can all work together and bring it up together.
Yeah, but which is such, like, obviously the right thing to do.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, but to that kid's point, he was like, yeah, for obviously systemic reasons. And I was just like, God, yeah, damn it.
So the airport scene.
Yeah.
Yep.
I watched that the first time, and I was thinking, he does not want to be there. He's pretty confident he's going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's. I didn't even think he was going to show up at the airport. But once he's there and he has the gun, I looked at that scene for a couple seconds. I was like, he's going to go in with a gun and he's going to get busted. And maybe that'll, like, he will hope, like, in a way this earns him some degree of cred or something. That's what I thought he was going to do. And it gives him an out from even having to face being fired by his cousin.
Yeah.
He's just gone, right? He's in prison for a bit.
Well, and they definitely wanted us to know, because, like, they were showing the screen and I was just like, God damn it, he has a gun in his fucking backpack still. Yep. And then he was like, set it down. I was just like, oh my God.
It
was like
me,
the longest 3 minutes of my life. I was like, no.
The beginning of that episode where he goes, where they're moving, and he goes, oh yeah, and get rid of this. It's like, that's coming back. Yeah,
that's coming back for sure.
But I kind of forgot about it for a little bit.
Oh yeah, they do a good job kind of, you know, tying up a bunch of other stuff in the season.
Yeah.
Making you forget.
But once he does the switcheroo, I wasn't even thinking of the ramifications of that until he sits down and Al talks to him about it. And it was like, you know what? Sometimes you gotta fuck other people to get ahead. And I was like, oh, so what Al's actually proud of is that by screwing over and what's the other hip the other rapper's name?
Yoo-hoo.
Yeah, Yoo-hoo is what I keep thinking of, but I'll just call Mew.
Yeah, when Ern is like, that shit is delicious. It's so funny. Like, and it's so easy to forget watching this how funny the show is.
But the bigger idea was that the Yoo-Hoo dude was headlining. So by screwing him over, Al would have taken over the headlining spot. And Al was like, that was a baller move of you to do that. And, you know, you're fucking over. But, you know, we're all in this struggle right now, right? And that's what I want for my manager. And when it turns out the other guy was just slippery and was able to be like, nah, I let my guy take the fall for that. And I'm back on here. It was like Al going like, well, I just gave you my vote of confidence. But in a way, shit. Yeah. I didn't get what I thought I was getting out of this.
One of those... You think what you did was good, but look what his manager did for him.
Yeah, but also... Like,
that's what I need. I need a Jewish lawyer.
But also what Ern kind of pointed out, like when he told him, he was like, no, I put it in his bag.
Yeah.
It did two things. It pointed out what you were just saying, Grant, which is that like I was looking out for you.
I was trying to do what you thought I did.
Yeah, but also... Fuck that guy.
Well, no. I think it also points out that his manager was willing to do
the
something
same thing.
Just as good, if not even more worse, because he's going to jail for his guy now.
There's a lot there.
A lot of levels. You know, and here's the thing. This is easily, probably. This is top three, definitely. And this might be my favorite thing that I've watched this year.
It's fantastic.
Oh, but for sure. Yeah.
If I can be critical for a moment.
Please do. That's what we do here.
So I thought this season started the first few episodes really great with the concept of it's Robin season in Atlanta. Like people are getting robbed and we're introduced to these little vignettes of just how normalized these people are becoming with crime. Where when we see it happen, it's very jarring for the viewer. It's not normal at all, but I mean, everybody's
talking. It's almost a little surreal, too.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, it's Robin. But I felt like about halfway through the season, they just kind of cut that. And, you know, I could definitely see where the idea of Robin season, like, if you look at the FUBU jersey episode, you could say that Ern kind of robbed this kid of, you know, like, his credit. So maybe more on a concept level, it was still
Robin
season.
I think thematically, it plays through the season. Mm-hmm. Ern's ultimate decision to set up that other guy to take the fall so that, you know, they could bump up and he would be kicked off the flight. I think, it all seems to fit within the theme they're going for.
Yeah, I guess I was not disappointed, but really affected early on by those one-off scenes where people were getting robbed. And I thought that would have been nice in some of the later episodes. Even though they did fit a lot more story into those episodes, it's kind of, you can't cram everything in there.
I will say that we talked about this quite a bit, which I hope comes across to you, the listener, as us giving this a huge recommendation because we're super excited about this.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know why it hasn't won everything that a television show can win. Like, and part of this might be like being a middle-aged white lady. There's a lot about this that's probably pretty like foreign to me.
Right.
You know,
is foreign to the television landscape.
That's what I was about to say, is that like I'm not trying to like sell short that like, you know, I might not be, you know, have a lot of connections with what the show is putting on. But I have never seen a show like this. And I've seen funny shows. I've seen heartbreaking shows. I've seen scary shows. I've never seen a show
balances the ongoing arcs and yet has this episodic element to it. And still retains such poignancy. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I've never seen a show like this.
You know, he said that Donald Glover said he was influenced by Larry David, that he wanted to create like a curb for black people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And when you think of like the situation,
like improv-y, I guess that aspect.
No, but the idea
it's
that
awkward.
each situation kind of turns it into something even bigger. Like if you walk out on your friend in, you know, a manicure parlor, you can get jumped and go on a mystical journey in the woods.
right. Yeah. I guess what I was hinting at earlier when I was saying, you know, this is a slow burn, is that I do want, I want to see them grow a little faster. And I only say that, like, in so much as that I'm eager for it, but they can go at whatever pace they want, and I still absolutely adore this show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, I don't know. You see all these things being set up. They're going on an international tour, I guess. So that's kind of a big deal. But they still seem to film everything in such a small, intimate manner. And yeah, I don't want it to go, like, Entourage big, I guess. I don't want it to be all, like, glossy and, like, hokey at some point. So I guess I like how they keep it scaled. But, yeah,
You want to see it, like
Silicon Valley. I'm eager for successes.
Yeah, well, you want to see the arc progress.
Yeah,
you want to see the arc progress. You don't want to lose the kind of way that we see it through these different characters' eyes, and how certain episodes seem somewhat dedicated to these particular people's experiences, but also move on.
Yeah,
yeah, I can see that.
I find it very interesting the deliberate choice to show us, you know, like all the guys in their pajamas after they. You know, Al got through doing a set and like them backstage, but we don't see them on stage in pajamas looking cool, being like these rappers that everybody like. We only see them the moments where they're not cool.
Right.
You know,
we
barely see where he's taking a selfie with somebody. And
so we don't see the biggest success.
Yeah. Yeah. So Al to us, like, we don't look at Al and see Paperboy. Like, he's Al, you know, he's the one who's kind of got the money and is, you know, funding this whole thing and the reason all these people are together. I don't know. It's interesting, and it has to be deliberate, you know?
Yeah.
That they wouldn't show, you know, him on stage or anything like
that.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Man, I love this show.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's nothing on TV like it.
All right. Speaking of nothing on TV like it, it's not fully true because Legion also exists and is super crazy and cerebral. But we're going to talk about Westworld real quick, guys, because we are under legal obligation to cover every single episode this season.
Oh, my gosh.
And I will point out that we are running long, so we're probably not going to spend too much time on this episode.
Yeah, damn. Sorry, Westworld.
But this is the one you want to.
I know. We should have done Westworld before. Nobody wants to follow that act. Atlanta's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, well. Here we are introduced to, spoilers, but real quick, a whole nother aspect and a whole nother park within Westworld.
Shogun World.
Yeah, Shogun World. And we find out, because one of our guides through this world, going along with Maeve, is one of the like head writers of the park, that a lot of the plot lines and characters are just duplicate, so there's doppelbots that exist, and it's kind of funny, but I sort of found myself a little bit bored with some of this.
Yeah, episode. I liked the idea of this like universality of experience, that like, you know, being a mother is being a mother everywhere. If you were working, you know, as a sex worker in these times when you were property, that would be a similar experience everywhere. If you were a gunslinger, that's experience everywhere. I liked that aspect of it, but I do kind of have to agree with you.
Well,
I got a little disagreement in here. That's good. Go.
What I find interesting about this world, because you're right. Essentially, what they did, if we're going to just break it down bare bones, they took an episode from last season where we see the heist on the brothel, and they take and they just retold the story with completely different sets and characters in the Shogun world.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
Even the music. But and what these guys are saying is they essentially did that to kind of show this duality or whatever. But what I find more interesting about this Shogun world is, so you've got the Wild West. You've got the guy who wants to go there with his wife and show her that he can shoot a guy, you know, and then they're going to go have sex later. No, this is for the place
I think we just learned something about Kyle.
No, there was a character
last
season.
Good work, Westworld. Good work.
Like, oh, this guy's like the archetype. But no.
It is the fantasy. He's not wrong. Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm just going to kill somebody. But no, in Shogun World, it's like, no, I want to chop somebody's head off. I want to stab them in the eye with like a pokey stick. Like,
and like close to hand to hand. Yeah.
Yeah, and where there may be people in the West who are, you know, nostalgic over this like Western culture, there could be people in other cultures who are nostalgic for this other type of, you know, period and violence and, you know, sex and all this other stuff. So that I did find kind of interesting. I think
it's definitely more hardcore.
Well, I think this episode would have done so much better at the beginning of the season as like an episode one.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's what I ended up having an issue with. We got an episode, I want to say two episodes, three episodes ago, where we see a little glimpse of another park. Was it the like West Indies
like
or
East
something?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was West India, colonized India.
Yeah.
I think like
so
the British Empire
we see a little bit of that park. And what we see is going on there is that that park is also in disarray because the robots have awakened and
fucking shit up.
Yeah, they're fucking shit up and they're rioting. And what I didn't like about this episode was that this was a backslide into the narrative that we've already had to go through. And we're intimately familiar with how the narrative structure works from the first season. So this felt like almost a lazy rehash of that to like be introduced into this world. And then, oh, we have to go through a narrative that we know doesn't have as much weight. And I love the parts where Maeve is unlocking new abilities as she can telepathically shut down robots. That's fucking awesome, right? The battle scenes are really cool to look at, but I guess the overall, like, oh, we're trapped inside of another narrative structure that these robots are just kind of automatically running through was less interesting to me. Felt a little bit I don't know. It's a backslide in a widening scope of what's going on in the world.
Yeah, I have to agree. So one of the things I was concerned about with the show is that I liked it so much. And then once the robot started becoming aware, I was worried we were going to watch Jurassic Park.
Right.
Michael Crichton loves him some hubris. Mm. And I was worried. It's like, okay, well, now you've got to escape the robots. So when there was a second story about what the park is really about and then it got to this idea of immortality and things of that sort, I got super interested in that. And that's when I was like, okay, cool. I'm glad to hear we're not, you know, whatever, in Sphere and Jurassic Park and every other book he wrote about the thing, now it's going to kill you.
Right.
So that was, I think, what you're expressing is a little bit of my disappointment with it, which is that that's where my interest lies on progressing that storyline. And while I think it's cool that we're going to have to probably journey through a few different parks to kind of survive and figure out what's going on, if it doesn't tie back to that larger narrative, I also get a little bored.
It felt like spinning wheels in this episode.
Yeah,
a little
bit. Where
everything else was just like going for it.
So, a little bit.
So last season, you know, I felt a connection to Jimmy Simpson's character with Dolores, even after we get that, you know, the twist where we find out, you know, their story, we already know how it ends.
Right.
But I still, like, I wanted them to succeed, you know? Not crazy robot, you know, psycho Dolores we have now, but, like, that Dolores. I feel like Maeve's group, that's the group for me now where I'm like, I want her to succeed, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
We're with Maeve and her crew, not Dolores. She's...
Like, Dolores is batshit. And I'm like, I'm kind of fascinated because, like, she's also like this force of nature. It seems like she's kind of brilliant tactician.
Well, and I don't know what the end game is. And that I keep asking myself each episode, like, what is she getting at here?
Well, she has a dude who can like reanimate all robots. So she can like sacrifice people and then just raise them back up like a zombie army. So she's basically a necromancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing. But it seems like as far as who is more intellectually evolved, it's Maeve who has like unlocked her own not only like her own potential of like independence because she's no longer a slave to following through a programming protocol. It feels like Dolores is still kind of running through like a protocol, even in her more enlightened stage. And Maeve's just like, fuck it, I'm going to do whatever I want. And that means I'm going to go even to this fake-ass daughter I know is just a bullshit memory. I'm going to do it because I feel like it because that feels the most human of me. So I feel like she's more evolved, but also we see that she can telepathically shut down other people.
Well, and
I dream of genie.
That means she can also like eventually reprogram them and make everyone do what she wants just with their mind.
Well, and what I really liked about the show, and this is something I was super into, is that before Maeve does that, they were very careful, or I would like to credit them with being very careful to point out to us when they're looking for Abernathy,
yeah.
her father, mm-hmm. when they're looking for her father. The way that they think they're going to find it is that Bernard is going to search for him by querying the robot. So these computers can talk to each other. So once something is networked, that's it. All you need is for that one computer to figure out how to network with the other computers.
Right.
So in some ways, like Maeve is telepathically communicating with these creatures because we see them as human, but they're networked.
Yeah.
So
she knows how to bypass that.
Yeah, so she can bypass that.
But I love that, like, that was a power unlocked via stress.
Oh,
right?
For sure. That happened was awesome. But I also like that, like, it was grounded in, like, okay, no, we already learned these computers are networked, so
mm-hmm.
sure.
Let me ask you guys a question. I may have picked up on something, or I may be making this up. Maybe it's a theory.
I'm going to go picked up on it.
Because I was like, if that's what they meant when they said that, why didn't they focus on this more? But the Endians, the like crazy white face ones from the storyline that Ford was doing last season.
The Native Americans that don't seem to be like locked into the grid kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, and who Maeve can't network with.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. Did they say in this episode that they were actually put there by like the security force, that they're designed to capture the guests and to scalp the hosts?
Did they?
Okay, maybe I'm put two things together, but it sounded like, and I could be watching scenes from next episode and putting it together, but perhaps here's my theory.
All right. Okay, yeah, lay it on me.
That they either reprogrammed, or that the Native Americans, the zombie guys,
they are
actually a tool by the, you know, Delos to in an eventuality where the host rise up.
Just like a cleaning system.
Yeah, yeah. To go in, and because they only do two things. They capture and don't kill the people, and they scalp the hosts.
That's okay.
Interesting. Yeah, because I thought that they were, and this is something I think that we talked about last time we were talking about these episodes, is I do think they have a role to play. That makes a lot of sense. And then why kill the hosts in addition to the security thing? I still think there is an aspect to what we were talking to last time, which is that there's something about trauma that drives the awakenedness in the robots that we've seen.
Right.
And so that was kind of, I think, our working theory the last time we talked about this. And so in that sense, that particular that storyline can do two things then, which would be to serve a security, but also if, is it Alfred? The actual human that Bernard is?
Albert, yeah.
Albert,
yeah.
Sorry. I'm still thinking about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Albert.
Arnold.
Yeah. Arnold, yes.
Arnold, boy.
Arnold.
Oh, boy. Got to get that Arnold.
A and B.
Exactly. Arnold.
Alpha and Beta. Arnold and Bernard, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Arnold and Bernard. So it could be that he serves two purposes, then if Arnold ultimately wanted to wake them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's also a great point because of what we get with Dolores at the end.
Yeah.
She has that betrayal by Cyclops. James Marsden, his character, I don't remember his name. Teddy?
Yeah.
I'll say it's Teddy. The betrayal that he's not following her orders, and that he also isn't fully awake like she wants him to be. And so we see that she's initiating some basic torture protocol, which is supposed to be pretty extreme, but she's hoping that it'll be what he needs to basically unlock himself. So, yeah, to the point you're making, they need to go through some sort of extreme trauma to kind of click on.
Which is also fucked up because it's a little bit of the freedom thing that Maeve was speaking of, where she's like, oh, good, you guys are fighting for freedom, so then I guess we're allowed to go about our business. And Dolores is like, God damn it. I guess you are. You got me on a technicality, bitch. And so, like, she lets them go and she doesn't want to. And it's interesting because Dolores seems a little more by any means necessary.
Right, right.
Questionable.
So crazy theory time?
Yes.
Yeah, let's get weird.
All right. What if all the hosts were people who signed up for the immortality thing, but instead of like getting to live their lives like they thought they were just got their memories erased and thrown in this theme park.
So to that point, question.
Okay.
Okay.
That plays
into
the Delos thing from last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like when we're like looking at like doubles that kind of seem to exist but don't, and like the robots keep coming back, so it's hard to tell.
Right.
I kind of thought that the matriarch guy who owned the company, who Black Hat, White Hat.
Delos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looks a lot like Abernathy.
They look similar, but they're not the same actor.
They're not the same. No. They're not the same actor, but...
The same hair color.
Same kind of thing going on, too. So I didn't know if, like, when they were trying to smuggle things out, if it's related to him or not. If we're getting wild theories.
Could be.
The show is fascinating to discuss every single week, and we unlock new things.
I hope that...
Even when I was kind of down on this episode.
Well, and, you know, I'm kind of down on this season. Like, for as much as I liked this episode, and it was disappointing to hear you guys not as into it.
Well, I liked it. I just didn't love it.
I am kind of, I do like that you guys see, like, they could not knock this out of the park this season.
This
could definitely kind of just go into
It's weighty. So. They're juggling a lot of high concept stuff, and it's going to be difficult. It's an investment. Watch. Right? Mm-hmm. Like Legion. It's a show that you can't watch in the background while you're doing something. You have to be fully engaged and pay attention, and then maybe do a little bit of research after or listen to an awesome podcast like the TV Dudes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's us.
Listener question time. So if you guys like us over on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TVDudes, you can ask us questions once a week. If Grant remembers to actually put up a post, Randy's not here this week, so I was like, oh shit, I forgot to put up a post.
But you know what? I'm giving him my judgment face, just so you know. God damn it.
No, don't do that.
Okay, I'll stop.
Because our listeners are clutch. So
oh yeah, they are.
They are, because I put this post up like 3 hours ago, and... We got a good gaggle of questions here.
God damn it. They are killing it. They are killing it, you guys.
First off, Mike Moody. You know this guy. He is the head of our Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater.
Nice.
I kind of want to do a callback and be like, Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater.
There it is.
We've worked a couple of these.
I'm not good at voices.
He asks, y'all like Barry? And I got to say... He's been asking this every single week.
Okay.
I am finally caught up, too.
Did you guys see Barry?
I haven't, and I was actually going to recommend that it was something that we watched because everybody loves the shit out of it.
Les and I, like, went gaga for it last week. We talked about the whole season wrap-up.
Oh, where was I? Because I want to see you guys paint each other's nails and go gaga.
Yeah, we had meat dresses and the whole nine yards.
He had rollers in his hair.
It's, okay, Barry is fucking good. It is so good. And here's my question. What do you think? Is Barry a good guy? I mean,
is he a good guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably actually an easy question to answer.
He's a robot. All right.
He's not a good guy.
Like, no. I don't think he's an actual person. I think he is.
From Westworld?
No, like, kind of more along the lines of Westworld than like anybody else in his acting class. Although
you're gonna get me drunk,
there was that really great episode where he talked about the where he was having the dilemma with killing,
right?
And he was like, "Well, I'm a Marine and I killed," and he like put everybody in his class on blast,
right?
And you're like, "Oh, it's kind of a real person in there," but I definitely get the feeling like it's what if Dexter took an acting class to learn how to become, you know, like a normal person around everyone else.
Right.
And that's who Bill Hader's character is.
Man, the show is so good, and I can't recommend it enough. Go watch it if you guys get a chance.
Yep. I'm going to watch it.
Oh, the episode where he finally performs in that showcase. I mean, yeah, validates. If you're on the fence, you'll get to the episode where you see him perform for the first time, and you're like, fuck.
Ben Hamill says, is there anything Donald Glover can't do?
No.
The answer is no. Even Kyle Volpe said lick his own elbow, and I gotta say, you know, I bet he could do it.
You know, he could even be as good of a lawyer as a Jewish guy, but, you know, he might not have the same connection.
He's so... man, he's fantastic in everything he does. He's a savant.
I love him.
Yeah. He's no Damon Lindelof, but he's like number one and a half on my list.
You take that back.
Go.
He's Damon Lindelof.
God. Oh, wait. No, we agree. Okay.
Go.
I agreed with you. Take it back.
Yeah, no, we love him, and he's perfect.
You want some good Donald Glover? Go look up Bro Rape, Derek Comedy.
Oh, yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Oh, Jesus. Alec Miracle says, well, dudes, I just started the show since 8. Without spoiling, obviously, what are your thoughts on the show? Which I gotta ask you guys, have you guys, either of you seen the show?
I'm waiting until it hits Pornhub.
Oh.
Did you hear that?
Is it really?
Yeah, no, like, because, what was it, Amazon dropped it? Like, Pornhub is gonna pick it up and distribute the Sense8. Yeah.
Les actually replied and said it's amazing and everyone should love it forever. And then he goes on to talk about it some more. You can check that out at facebook.com/TVD. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Les has good taste.
Our buddy Melissa Garamonte, who you can check out at FemTV, her podcast, as well as she's on the Mr. Robot O podcast.
Love her.
A proud member of the Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater.
No, we can't backslide.
Oh, God damn it.
She asks, what do you think it's going to take for Earn to finally lose his temper on Atlanta? His sense of calm is almost eerie at times. And I would say it would take the penultimate episode of season 2.
I thought he was going to lose it a little bit when they were waiting for the passport. And he's like, no, man, I'm not doing okay. My entire world is crashing down around me. And he looked like he was going to start crying, which, to be honest, is how I would respond in that situation.
We got to see him lose it in season 1 when he gave Darius the money for the dogs.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that was a good little breakdown moment. You know, after that penultimate episode, I think shit's going to get real for Earn when he has another breakdown like that, but the guy he tries to fight is smaller than him. And, yeah.
Oh, and he actually hurts someone.
Yeah. And
rather than getting hurt. Like, he can take the blows, but can he handle if he, like, really actually hurts someone? Because he seems a little bit too sensitive for that.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, go check out Atlanta, man.
We're going to end up on another hour, like, talking about Atlanta. It's so goddamn good.
Rob McCarthy says, can I leave a comment for all the people whose hands don't work well enough for DVR stuff? I tried to watch Krypton, but they had so many ads I had to turn it off and read. Which, yeah, that is an annoying accessibility problem that... They like some of these channels just like overdo it with ads, and especially the ones that like they require like engagement or some shit. It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, part of me wonders, like, if you only have one ad to play for every commercial break, is there not some other way you can, you know, create a variation on that? Like, What is the point of showing somebody the same, like, 30-second Lexus ad?
It's the same one. That's so fucking annoying. Like, I liked when Hulu was doing, and I think sometimes they still do it, but it's not always. They'll do that, do you just want one giant ad at the start? And I'm like, yes. Just give me one. You can make it however long you want. I'll go take a bathroom break and microwave a little pizza, and I'll be back here.
I'm, like, willing to give up a Saturday out of each month to sit down timeshare style and watch all of Hulu's ads just so they will leave me alone when I'm watching AP Bio.
Okay, that's just, yes. Co-signed.
Oh, so have you seen – you've seen AP Bio?
Yeah.
Do I need to watch that shit?
I'm loving it.
It's nice.
Great.
Yeah, I think
– and it didn't get canceled.
They did – They nailed the kids. Like, they got really great kids to be on the show.
Are we not
with
doing
them.
Phrasing anymore?
Oh! That's gross. Your phrasing is gross. So, no, Ashley, we're not doing it.
That's the only kind of phrasing there is. There's no point to having phrasing if it's not gross.
Fine. Fair enough. Phrasing's back.
Phrasing, Kyle. Phrasing.
They nailed the kids.
Zach McLernan says, with. Sorry, guys.
That good of a question.
It's okay. He's going to run a triathlon on Monday. He'll be fine.
I know. I'm supposed to go run
You're
a triathlon.
Fucked. You're fucked, son.
My body's failing.
Beer extravaganza this weekend. Good luck.
Zach McLernan says, with Amazon preparing to field Lord of the Rings, East of West, Ringworld, Lazarus, Snow Crash, and now it is preparing to revive The Expanse, it seems genre is becoming the dominant showpieces for Amazon, as with FX, as with HBO. Yeah, they're all...
Yeah, I think it's just like the new chic, man.
He says, is this the best way for Amazon to set itself apart, or will it be its downfall? I'm of the opinion that Amazon's downfall is their mediocre shortcuts in production quality. I think that they end up securing great shows and great talent. Like, Transparent was a big win for them. Yeah. Mozart in the Jungle was getting critical accolades, and they were able to get
Top Gear.
Top Gear, but I was thinking the Nazis.
That's Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, Man in the High Castle. But I feel like they have a certain style that almost feels like USA, where they don't have the panache, the final glisten on everything that makes it like have both weight and style.
Yeah, also they won't play on my Chromecast, so...
Accessibility issues again.
No, but jokes aside, I just really want to see more Expanse. Don't fuck this up for me, Amazon. You're already not on my Chromecast. I got to drag my laptop from the other room, plug that shit in with an HDMI cable. I'm fucking annoyed.
Hopefully the Expanse works, because they are going to bring most of their production crew with them and maintain, right?
Amazon.
I love that show.
They need to do like Hulu and get a lot of like foreign shows, like British shows that are like dead ringers to supplement some of their riskier stuff, because in order to have good TV, they got to make a couple stinkers. Right. Netflix has made stinkers. Hulu's made stinkers. That's just how it works, you know, all the major networks. So, but if they don't have, you know, some of like another, I mean, like Top Gear, like I was going to go wherever those guys went. So get some of those to pay the bills, and then you can make some stinkers and get some good ones.
Also, I was picturing the stinkers and they were way cute.
They're adorable little stinkers.
Stinkers are cute.
They're cute.
John from Cincinnati was a stinker. Cute little stinker.
It was a stinker.
See, even HBO does it.
It was a piece of shit.
It happens. It happens to everyone.
Kyle Volte says, hey, TV dudes, any thoughts on the return of Murphy Brown? And, you know, Les and I talked about this last week on the upfronts, which we basically came down on fuck Roseanne and hooray for Murphy Brown, although we're probably still not going to watch it. But we like more having a voice that is rational. But have you guys seen like the previews and everything?
Mm-mm. What's it look like?
It's going to be her like kind of like the good fight, just being like, Trump is fucked up and these are the issues in the world and fuck him. And I'm like, okay, good.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, a part of me is... the reboots these days.
It doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, and Roseanne especially.
But Roseanne was a big success. So.
I know, and it especially breaks my heart because I actually liked watching that show. I mean, it wasn't anything brilliant. But yeah, it used to be progressive. And it was actually kind of interesting seeing, I think she was on Jimmy Kimmel, which I don't usually watch his show per se, but he was interviewing her. And he asked her, he was like, but you're pro-choice, you're a feminist, you're pro-gay rights. Like, how are you doing this? And she just got irate. Like, she didn't, address his questions in a reasonable way, which kind of made me sad.
You know,
these late-night hosts, you were talking about that, and then you were talking about how Colbert, drove David Cross off the set crying because he
made fun
of some skit they did, 20 years ago.
So, I love Colbert. he is my leader. Him and Ali Wong are my leaders.
Right.
But anyways, I watch them on YouTube. That's why.
Did you see when Colbert let Deadpool do his monologue?
It was so great.
That was very fun.
I guess for me, it's not so much. I mean, I'll probably check out a couple episodes of it, but I just find some of these reboots kind of strange.
They're wedged in there forcefully. I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, it's
an organic revival, right?
Yeah, it's like Who Met Your Mother and Will and Grace. And I was just like, so we all remember how Arrested Development went. We all remembered that these aren't The Simpsons. They're not cartoon characters. They're a different age now.
You know, I find something interesting with this reboot culture we're in. They always talk about how history is written by the winners. I feel like our history will be written by the popular franchise. Like, there are good stories to tell, but you can't just have your story out there unless you're going to put the Ninja Turtles through your store, you know, or Murphy Brown. Or it's like you've got all these great artists who, you know, in order to get paid to tell these stories and do these things, they have to find one of these properties.
You know, something really great is a friend of the show, Joe Parsons.
Right.
Made a comment once that warmed my heart and made me laugh for an embarrassing amount of time, which is that we need to be careful or we're going to put the baby boomers and their nostalgia to fucking shame. And we all hate baby boomers for good reasons. We need to slow our roll before we turn into some Forrest Gump motherfuckers.
Too late.
God damn it.
Our culture, we thrive on social media and remembering everything and reviving it. And either revivals like Murphy Brown or reboots like Lethal Weapon and they're bringing back Magnum P.I. without a mustache
Fuller House.
That's all we had was the mustache.
Yeah. Ugh. All right, last question, because this is funny. Michael Gassini says, so can we already call Teddy Perkins as being the best single episode of TV of 2018?
Yes.
There we go, yes. And I was like, do not introduce us to talking to Atlanta again. We already did that forever.
So here's the thing, is if it was an episode of Atlanta, yeah, I'm on board. That episode was the best episode.
Yeah, and they could nominate any episode. It can even be that one episode that wasn't as good. And I'll be like,
no,
yeah.
I'm in. There's not anything on television that I've seen like Atlanta.
Could you totally see Donald Glover watching Get Out and going, oh, that's not what Darius would do. This is what Darius would do in a horror movie.
Right. It's like, oh, wait, I have the same actor, Lakeith. I'm going to put him in this situation.
Yeah, yeah, but he's not going to get taken out in the first half.
Man, guys. All right, this has been a lot of fun. I hope you listeners have enjoyed this. We will be back next week. But until then,
PV Dudes out.
Yeah, we're out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.